Employers cut more jobs than expected in July.
What's it going to take to get the unemployment rate down?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Bill Radke. You're listening to the Midday Update from Marketplace.org. It's Friday, August 6th. American workers lost even more jobs than expected last month, 131,000.
The unemployment rate stayed the same, however. We're going to ask what can be done to get more people back to work. Also, Greece is in line to get some international help. Its budget in better shape than it was, but is it out of the woods? And all the business news of the week in a Marketplace Minute. That's later. But first,
this morning, the government told us American employers cut even more jobs than predicted last month, 131,000. The government's official unemployment rate stays at 9.5%. Joining us now is Jack DeGann, Chief Investment Officer at Harbor Advisory in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Hello, Jack.
Good morning, Bill.
What is the most important thing for us to take away from this unemployment news?
The most important thing for your listeners to focus on is how many private sector jobs were created. And that number was a plus 71,000. And the reason that's important is that private employers are the real creators of jobs in this country.
Yes, so private jobs up, but we lost more public government jobs than expected. And overall, what should we make of the news?
It's hard to spin this report positively. Many of the jobs that were lost, 143,000, were temporary census jobs, and that was much anticipated. I think less anticipated was the loss of another 50,000 state and local government jobs, which is an overhang that we're going to be facing because the stimulus from last year is beginning to run off, and those state and local governments are having to face budget deficits.
So, well, Congress is about to send $26 billion to the states to head off more layoffs. How much will that help?
That will help, Bill. It will push back the date at which these cuts are going to have to be realized. But unless the economy picks up and therefore state and local tax revenues pick up, there are more job losses ahead for those governments.
Okay, grim news. Jack DeGann at Harbor Advisory in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Mortgage giant Fannie Mae came out with its earnings late yesterday, and it reported another loss, the company's 12th quarterly loss in a row. Plus, Fannie asked the federal government for more cash. And if you remember, the feds took control of Fannie 2 years ago. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman is here to talk about that, though. Good morning, Mitchell.
Well, the positive spin, as my grandfather might have put it, could have been worse.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it has been worse. This is actually Fannie's smallest loss in 3 years. And in the bailout column, Fannie and its smaller compatriot Freddie Mac have already gotten $146 billion to stay afloat. So another $1.5 billion, I don't know, seems like a drop in the bucket.
Quite a drop. But, Mitchell, the housing market is still so lousy. When is Fannie going to stop asking taxpayers for more money?
Well, Fannie and Freddie together still back 9 in 10 new home loans, and the government has more or less pledged to support them indefinitely. So we don't really know when they'll be off the dole. Mortgage delinquency rates are still near record highs, so these lenders have to set aside massive reserves to cover future losses. But, and this is an important one, the quality of loans that Fannie has guaranteed or bought up since the financial crisis hit is actually much better. Underwriting standards were tightened way up after the problems in the mid-2000s. And so far, those loans are actually performing well. The people who are getting loans are paying their mortgages. That stabilizes Fannie's balance sheet going forward. Now, if the economy dips into recession again, you know, housing prices plunge another 20%, all bets are probably off.
Right. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman. Mitchell, thank you.
You're welcome.
Listening to the Midday Update for Friday, August 6th. I'm Steve Chiotakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at our website, marketplace.org. We're going to get a take now on the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics around the world, and how it affects us here in the United States. Earlier this week, wheat prices rose on news of a heat wave and drought wiping out crops in Russia. Russia's one of the world's biggest bread baskets, and now Moscow's imposed a ban on wheat exports, sending prices even higher. What does that mean for the price of food? From London, Christopher Worth explains.
The price of wheat surged another 8% after the ban was announced, and that's raising fears that other grain-growing countries like China and India might begin hoarding their own supplies. That's what happened in 2008, and that sparked a global food crisis, complete with riots from Egypt to Haiti. But Martin Dabou of Investec says this year, global stockpiles are about 50% higher than they were a couple of years ago. Plus, farmers in the U.S. are growing a lot more wheat than was expected.
Traditionally, the U.S. has tended to be the sort of exporter of last resort, and I'm sure we'll take up some of the slack that's left by Russia. I think this is good news for American wheat farmers, both in terms they'll be selling a lot of volume and they'll be selling it at good prices.
And it's not just wheat growers that stand to benefit. Farmers don't like to feed their cows expensive food, so instead of buying wheat, they'll find cheaper alternatives. Witness economics in action. All that demand has driven up the price of soybeans and corn. In London, I'm Christopher Worth for Marketplace.
International inspectors say Greece has been making required budget cuts and managing its debt. That's a far cry from where it was just a few months ago. It's now eligible to receive international bailout money, but it's not home free. From Athens, Joanna Kakissis reports.
It's the best financial report card Greece has gotten since the crisis began. The country is nearly $400 billion in debt, but inspectors say the country's tax increases and government cutbacks are working. They say Greece will make its deficit-cutting goal this year through a crackdown on tax evasion and spending cuts at all levels of government. Dora Bakoyannis, a member of parliament and former Athens mayor, says the crisis is an opportunity for Greece to change its long history of political corruption.
We made a lot of mistakes, but this country has a lot of potential, hidden potential, where we politicians have not been able until now to allow it to grow.
But while this week's grades are good, the graduation is a ways off. The country's economy is expected to shrink by 4% because of the withdrawal of all that government spending. And labor unions say unemployment could hit 20% this year. Unions are planning more demonstrations this fall when workers' paychecks shrink and Greeks feel the cutbacks in their pocketbooks. In Athens, I'm Joanna Kakissis for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, August 6th. I'm Bill Radke. For the latest look at the markets, go to the numbers at marketplace.org. New Jersey lawmakers are gathering in Atlantic City today, and they are not there to gamble. Actually, that's Atlantic City's problem, not enough people there to gamble. Reporter Sally Herships says the entire state is feeling the drop-off.
A couple of years ago, Atlantic City's entertainment industry employed 50,000 people, but now that number has dropped by almost a quarter. John Hansen is chairman of the Governor's Advisory Commission for New Jersey Gaming. He says part of the problem comes from outside the state.
Competition. When the casinos opened in Atlantic City, there were no casinos on the eastern seaboard.
Today, there are lots of places to roll the dice. New York, Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Delaware. Jim Whalen is a New Jersey state senator. He says Atlantic City is run down. Not a selling point for cash-strapped tourists.
People don't feel safe because they're looking at a block where the dominant characteristic is empty ground and abandoned buildings.
He says Atlantic City needs new casinos.
We've had one new casino open in the last 20 years.
And new thinking.
Dining, retail, entertainment. We can't just think in isolation of here's a casino with a bunch of rooms and a bunch of slot machines.
Casino gaming represents one of New Jersey's largest industries. Nearly $1 billion in state and local taxes. I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
This summer's been a bust for a lot of music acts. The biggest concert promoter, Live Nation, their revenues are down 12%. Christina Aguilera canceled her tour because of slow ticket sales. But one music festival keeps bucking the trend. The Lollapalooza tour kicks off today in Chicago, and tickets are selling. Marketplace's Janet Babin wondered why some acts are not singing the recession blues.
Lollapalooza is expected to sell out, despite an antitrust investigation into the festival's promoters. Fans will shell out more than $200 to see dozens of bands, including this one, the Drive-By Truckers.
Working this job is a kick in the pants. Paul Reznikoff publishes Digital Music News. He says the recession has made fans more frugal, but they consider Lollapalooza a bargain.
It's about more than just music, right? It's this huge get-together and experience and lots of bands. There's just a lot there.
And the recession can actually work in a smaller act's favor. David Lowry fronts the 90s rock band Cracker that's in the midst of its summer tour.
Our gross is probably about the same as last year. Our net is probably actually a little better.
Lowry says the band increased profits by playing less expensive, smaller venues and corporate-sponsored events for a guaranteed fee. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
Investment bank Goldman Sachs' Golden Touch isn't working out so well these days for its nearly 40% stake in a for-profit college company. The Education Management Corporation is part of an industry that's been under attack from the government and some of its students. And the Government Accountability Office just released an undercover investigation into that industry. Bloomberg Businessweek education reporter John Hecklinger wrote about Goldman's investment and the accusations lobbed against some of the schools. He's with us now from Boston. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why would Goldman Sachs get into the for-profit school business?
Well, Goldman and a couple of other investors acquired Education Management Corp. in 2006. They saw a company that was growing very fast. Right now, things are changing quite fast. Congress, the Education Department, the Obama administration are now asking some very tough questions about whether for-profit colleges are delivering for students.
Are delivering in what way?
Well, the big concern is that the schools are quite expensive. Students end up with heavy debts. The default rates on student loans are higher at for-profits than at traditional schools. And then the other worry is about taxpayers. The vast majority of the revenue of for-profit colleges comes from federal student loans and grants. And if students can't pay back their loans, taxpayers are going to end up having to pick up the bill.
What makes this situation different from, say, a kid going to college at the University of Michigan or, you know, Northern Arizona University? I mean, what's the difference between that and these for-profit schools? Because I can think, you know, I was saddled with a lot of college debt as well.
For-profit colleges make that exact point. The big issue that Congress is looking at are that these are companies that recruit very heavily. In fact, this week, the Government Accountability Office released a report where they sent undercover investigators to 15 schools, including one owned by Education Management Corp. And they found that in all 15, recruiters made misleading comments in one way or another to students.
And what are the for-profit schools saying?
They say that they're filling a really valuable niche, that their schools are actually catering to poor minorities, first-generation college goers, who are shut out of the traditional system.
John Hecklinger is education reporter for Bloomberg Businessweek. He was with us from Boston. John, thanks.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Friday, August 6th. I'm Steve Chiatakis. For the latest look at the markets, check out the numbers at our website, marketplace.org. The insurance giant American International Group, AIG, posted another loss today, more than $500 million. But the drop comes from charges related to selling assets to repay the federal government bailout. Aside from that, though, well, they made a little money, more than expected. Chris Whalen is Managing Director for Institutional Risk Analytics. He's with us live from New York City. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning.
Is this an improvement?
It's a modest improvement. They were still losing money on insurance underwriting slightly. And, you know, the year-to-year comparisons are not bad, but it's nothing to jump for joy over if you're the U.S. taxpayer, because there's still very little prospect of us being made whole.
They were losing not as much money this time around than last year.
Yeah, it depends. If you look quarter to quarter, second quarter last year versus this quarter, it's not bad. Slight improvement. If you look at the 6 months, it's not quite as flattering. But, you know, this company is not exactly, even today, running on all cylinders. So it's somewhat unfair to drill down. They were trying to sell most of this company 6 months ago. So, you know, there's been a lot of disruption inside AIG.
What should the government do, Chris? Are taxpayers going to get their money back on this?
Well, I've always been an advocate of putting AIG into bankruptcy, and the reason I say this is that the first thing the trustee would do on behalf of the creditors, and the U.S. government is the largest creditor, obviously, would be to claw back all the money that was given to Goldman Sachs and Deutsche Bank and the other big dealers. That's the first order of business. It's about $20 billion. And then the trustee would sell the assets. And I think that's how you end this. There's no other insurer or financial company out there that's big enough to buy AIG. That's part of the problem. It's just too big. It was the biggest insurance company in the world. So unless you can sell the pieces, which is difficult, I just don't know where we go from here.
But taxpayers getting their money back, no?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, to me, the payouts to Goldman and the other dealers who were literally raping this company were so odious and so bad in terms of public policy that even today, I would still recommend to the president that he think about putting this company through a restructuring and a bankruptcy, because, as I said, the trustee could claw that money back from the banks, and they couldn't do anything about it.
Got to wrap it up there. Chris Whalen, Managing Director for Institutional Risk Analytics. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Finally, all the business news of the week in a Marketplace Minute. Here's Bill Racky.
Unemployment news for July just came in, and it's awfully high. Once again, the economy's aching while companies show us the money they're making. Kraft sold a whole lot of cheese nips and Chips Ahoy and Miracle Whips and Ritz and Kool-Aid and Shake and Bake and A1 sauce to put on your steak, while Procter & Gamble was head and shoulders above the rest. Thanks to Crest and Pampers and Pringles and Bounty and Braun and Tide and Gillette and Downy and Dawn. Profits were disappointing at Dow, which used to own scrubbing bubbles, but now it's just chemicals, pesticides, styrofoam, and plastics and rubber and stuff for your home. Profits were up at the other Dow, Jones. It's one of the things Rupert Murdoch owns, along with the Wall Street Journal and Fox. You know his shares rose if you follow the stocks. Meanwhile, the rest of us suffer along, expecting bad news and hoping we're wrong. Maybe the jobs will come back. We'll see. I'll see you at marketplace.org.
And finally, a fond farewell to a trusted director, producer, and friend, someone who's worked tirelessly to make this program shine over the years. Jennifer Collins leaves us to pursue reporting in the field. She's going to do great. For her dedication and true grit, we all say thank you, Jennifer. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.